Races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, and still looking at BPs here, and we obviously got a few of these races that we didn't talk about at Pimlico, and I'm sure tomorrow I'll also have I'll probably get some opinions on this card from Nick, but principally, well, we got Krennic too for New York. Talk about here. Let me get two races in that Marty didn't look at the turf races. I'll figure out who did the advances on that. As I said about the Murphy reconvene. You know, feels like a horse that everybody's landing on 10-1, and so you can anticipate that that number is going to come down. And Don Juan Kitten makes a lot of sense in that spot. In the girls' race, this is really, to me, this is the one that you're going to be taking swings. You had a 9-2 favorite here as well, Vigilante's Way. So two races, a 13-horse field and a 14-horse field, and 9-2 favorites. The two horses that at first blush when I went through here, the two that kind of caught my eye, Liz Merriman has got the Mizzen Mast filly that she bred and she owns, Caravelle. And this one is stretching out to the mile, but there's some things to like about how she has made her way to be 3-for-3. Two races at Penn National on the grass, turf sprinting, and then over to Presque Isle in the Lady Erie. And she is won by a length and a quarter in her maiden race, then state bred allowance, 5 1/4 lengths, and then most recently in Presque in the open stake by 3 1/4. So she's essentially trouncing fields. She's won wire to wire. She's also won from dead last in her debut. And then in the stake, in the Lady Erie, she more or less was vying for the lead before drawing off. But she was really not. It didn't take much to get her around. She gives every indication that the mile is not going to be an issue. And she starts the bidding at 12-1. You also end up with Paco Lopez, which, you know, doesn't ever hurt. It seems, you know, you know you're going to get an effort, and you know you're going to be in the race. The other horse that caught my eye at a decent price, also lightly raced, the Caracanti filly from Mike Stidham for the Moors, homebred Princess Grace. She was a first out winner, going a mile at Colonial, then came to Monmouth and won an allowance. And Joe Bravo gets aboard. She is tractable and can, you know, stay fairly close to paces or you know, sit a little bit off. She looks very versatile. And at 10-1, Princess Grace made a lot of sense. So 3-9 as a big part of my interests in the Hilltop, but absolutely spectacular and going to be a, you know, what's important is that you, if you're playing the multis, both of these races, you're in a situation where it's going to behoove you to, you know, try to get a little narrow, because on either side, you know, there's going to be races that require you know, some spreading. And, you know, let me mention the Miss Preakness too for a second. And, you know, Ed, I thought Ed triggered an interesting thought yesterday in our conversation. in the Miss Preakness, you potentially are looking at the same scenario that we ended up seeing it at Churchill and in the Eight Bells. And that is Monday call and somebody else, Fly on Angel, Ain't No Elmers. I mean, there's other speed in here. So there feels like an opportunity for somebody to sit off and potentially pick everybody off late the way Sconson did in the Eight Bells. And I'll give you one that's 20 to 1. Ankle Monitor. Claudio Gonzalez, who seems to win regularly. And I Victor Carrasco, who I like a lot as a rider, has had some very unlucky health interruptions to his career. Ankle Monitor, 20 to 1. A raison d'etre filly out of a K1 King mare. There's an interesting pedigree. So it's a terrific card. Rich Eng, I can hear in the background. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Steve.
Rich, you know, I had Dick Powell early, and so you're kind of bookending a little bit. And, you know, you and Dick with full card selections when it comes to Preakness Day. So I can't really squeeze you for too many because people are going to, you know, are going to buy the opinions. But. You know, you're always generous when it comes to offering some thoughts, and here we are, you know, here we are at this strange juncture at the end of the Triple Crown Trail in October.
Yes, it is, and I even did the labor of love to do the Friday card, even though there ended up being only one major stakes, the Pimlico Special at the end, but I did the Friday card if people want to get a little tune-up, a little warm-up for Pimlico. You know, one thing about seeing a track that is having an extremely short meet is you can learn a lot of things just by watching and maybe participating on the races maybe the day before and see some trends that sure. might happen on the main track, that might happen on the turf course. I knock on wood, I haven't seen the weather reports. I'm hoping everything stays on turf and that the weather is fine back in Baltimore. But if they want to try the Friday, I've got that up there too on bridgenet.com. And then, of course, Saturday's card is tremendous, so I'm looking forward to participating there.
Well, and when it comes to how we've arrived at Preakness, an extra 2 weeks between Derby and the quote unquote second leg, in this case, the last of the three classics this year. How have you adjusted, or how do you recommend people adjust their thinking? Because a lot of the maxims that we deal with out of Derby to Preakness, they really don't necessarily apply. It's not 2 weeks, and it's much more of a typical, you know, 4 week spread between stakes races for horses. And then, of course, there's the whole matter of the 3 year olds that have developed at a different rate. You've got some horses in here that, you know, kind of were held back and, you know, might be improving at a time of the year that, you know, that makes a view of this race, you know, that much more intriguing.
Well, you know, if I can make some sort of a comparison, maybe our Triple Crown this year is closer in time frame to, you know, what the Canadians go through or up in Canada with their Triple Crown, because there's a lot more spacing between the Triple Crown events, and I know one of them is on turf, and you know, two of them are on the main track, but it's different. It's a whole different ball game, and if things return to any sort of normalcy in 2021, Steve, we won't be seeing this again. But, you know, everything you say is correct. Everything you say is true. We're seeing a different cast of characters than we would have back in May and June, because it's just so different. Horses are extremely perishable. Things happen to them, whether they suffer some illness or injury, and all of a sudden they fall by the wayside. And as you said, we've got some late bloomers that are coming up that would not have been around in May or June or ready to participate at that level, but they're ready to do it now. And I think certainly one of the biggest examples of that is Art Collector, because there was no way in the world he was going to run in the in any of the Triple Crown races in the spring, but Tommy Drury took advantage of the additional time and development of his horse, and now he's got one of the key contenders in the Preakness on Saturday, and I'll be forward enough to say that that is the horse I selected to win the Preakness on Saturday and upset a very, very short-priced Authentic, because I went with the Art Collector.
Well, and Art Collector is going to be a popular alternative. It even though he, at a glance, you know, feels like a horse that has to be involved, he doesn't necessarily have to, you know, spar with Authentic, and this has been kind of the conversation we've had all morning. First with Dick, and then with Steve Askin too. In fact, Steve and I spent quite a bit of time on the pace scenario, Rich, because there is the potential. I think, again, even though everybody is acknowledging there's more pronounced pace interested horses, there isn't necessarily a demand the lead type to, you know, absolutely challenge Authentic down the stretch and through the turn for the lead. There may be horses that are forwardly placed, but I think if John Velasquez wants to do what he did in Louisville, I don't see what exactly prevents him from doing it.
I agree with you on that level too, because let me interject this point that I think is a prospect too, is that the jockeys nowadays ride differently than decades ago. I know you and I, Steve, we remember the days of an Angel Cordero or a Patrick Valenzuela, and they were much more aggressive on their mounts. They were much more willing to get right into the race. And if someone they thought was trying to steal the race with a slow pace, well, they would move into the race earlier and challenge the leader. And jockeys nowadays seem to be much more I don't know if passive is the right word, but they're more patient. And there's certainly some positives to that, but there's also the fact that it allows some horses to just sit on the front end and, you know, basically have a pretty easy time of it. And then when you try to pass them and from the quarter pole in, they've got plenty of energy, plenty of juice left in the tank, with plenty of gas left in the tank. So it's a lot different nowadays. But, you would think that someone like Authentic, that if he goes to the front with John Velasquez, he would be unchallenged, and that certainly is a possibility. Actually, one of the horses I thought who might have an opportunity, if he was with a different barn, to challenge him would be Thousand Words, but it just, I would seriously doubt if the two backward horses would even think of competing with one another on the front end.
Well, and I guess the horse that I gotta turn back and there we go back to my paperwork. I always at this level and in this kind of a race, you just wonder if there's anybody that's going to be hell bent and is going to say, you know, I have to have the lead here, and at the same time, you're sure to injure your chances. And when you look at the way Art Collector won the Bluegrass, he didn't have to, you know, have the lead, and I can't believe that Robbie Alborado is going to demand the lead with Swiss Skydiver. I the more I've been thinking about it all morning, I do wonder if, you know, Johnny doesn't, you know, the horse is naturally fast, I won't be surprised, let's put it that way, if he gets to the lead on the turn, and, you know, there might be horses in pursuit, but nobody, you know, necessarily, you know, challenging him, you know, through the first quarter mile plus.
Well, you know, I think the most popular spot in the race that multiple jockeys are going to try to sit is either second and third and fourth, just like right off of this horse. So if John has the lead, and I won't say unchallenged, but, you know, you could try to put some pressure on the horse without actually dueling head and head. They could see others, you know, at least sticking close to him. You know, one of my premises for trying to upset a horse like this, and one, he's going to be, I think he's going to be an extremely short price. I think there's no way in the world he goes off at 9-5, which is his morning line. I think he's going to be closer to even money, if not even 4-5. But, you know, if you look at the speed figures of his last two wins, which were both huge in the Kentucky Derby and Haskell, if he matches those and runs a third race of that quality, that ilk, he's probably the most likely winner. But, you know, if we're ready to put Authentic in the same realm of Justify and American Pharoah, not that he has no chance to win the Triple Crown, but they ran one huge race after another, which helped stamp their greatness. If he's able to run, you know, another huge race, then he certainly starts to elevate himself into those type of level of racehorses. But if I see some sort of regression in him, which I think is eminently possible, then you open up the possibility of an Art Collector, of a Swiss Skydiver, or somebody, you know, jumping into that void if the horse does not run that huge race once again.
Who intrigues you, Rich, from a value standpoint? You know, to kind of boost this thing along. I mean, there is a school of thought that says, you know, the top three choices are your most likely exacta, and maybe even, or, you know, your super, or three of your four super horses.
Well, you know, if you wanted to go, you know, really go outside of the barrel, I guess I might give someone like Max Player another chance. I was a little disappointed in his race in the Kentucky Derby. I thought he would do it just a little bit better, but certainly, you know, Steve Asmussen would now have this horse for a second chance, a second race off the trainial in the Rice, and, you know, maybe there's a step of improvement there. And I'll go with another Steve Asmussen horse that actually I've liked for some time is Pneumatic, the number 10 horse. He's 20-1. I thought,
Rich, if one more person tomorrow, it's uncanny. I mean, everybody, you, me, Steve Haskin, Ed DeRosa yesterday, Dick Powell, everybody is including Pneumatic. It's very funny.
Well, you know, here's another example of a horse who got himself into the Belmont Stakes and certainly did not embarrass himself in the Belmont, but he's more of a late-developing horse. His Pegasus win at Monmouth Park, hard-fought, but certainly showed improvement in his speed figures and his quality. If he has one more step of improvement in him, you know, he could certainly run into the number. I won't flat-out say he's going to win, but if he improves again, he certainly is a contender.
It's so funny. It's amazing, actually, how that happens. You know, when you get this is a bulky enough field, 11 horse field, and everybody, you know, people look at it from all different angles, and yet you got a hat full of people landing on the same horse as, you know, as a price play. It's kind of the problem with that, Rich, is, and I don't have to tell you, historically, you know, when everybody gloms on like that, it usually doesn't come off for whatever reason.
Oh, yeah. You know, I have that same situation with other handicappers when all of us land on the same horse, all of a sudden, instead of carrying 126 pounds, they're carrying 2,000 pounds. And that's exactly an awful lot of weight to carry of us handicappers and horse players.
Too funny. You know, I'm not, I don't, I got the same thing that I told Dick, which is it's not fair to press you on too many opinions just because of the people are paying for the analysis. So I don't want to I don't want to press you on other options. Although we could talk we could talk some of what we saw last week. Actually, give us we had Jay. What's today? Thursday? I'm losing track. I think Jay yesterday? No, Jay was Tuesday. And we managed to get quite a bit of the Santa Anita recapping done. Some thoughts about last weekend?
Well, I think the beauty of watching the last weekend and this weekend and next weekend will be, Breeders' Cup potentials of horses. I'm trying to remember if you could refresh my memory of some of the stakes, and then I'll come up with my analysis.
But oh, there you go.
Well, in front of me.
Yeah, well, most notably, I mean, the improbable win, and there's a lot of people that are either eager to be dismissive of Maximum Security, or looked at that outcome and said that you'd. You don't want him going forward. There's also a school of thought that says, getting him back to a mile and a quarter and a slower early pace probably benefits him at Keeneland. So improbable, more or less, gilds his resume toward the Breeders' Cup Classic, and I don't know what prevents him from being the favorite, the clear favorite for the Classic. But it also, there's also going to be some jury out on Maximum Security.
Yeah. Well, the thing about Improbable, which has happened in some of his prior races, is that a lot of times he has been his own worst enemy. In fact, that he's a bad actor, whether it's in the paddock or in the behind the starting gate or in the starting gate. And he's kind of hurt himself, his chances, on more than one occasion. And he seems to have much better behavior. I know after the race, Drayden Van Dyke gave a tremendous amount of credit to the assistant starter, I think it was Tim Craigmile, for helping settle the horse down before the race and in the starting gate. And that was pretty important for his success. And, Improbable has always had enough talent, more than enough talent, to be among the very best of his generation. So he at this point, probably is going to be the favorite for the Breeders' Cup Classic. And as far as Maximum Security is, I know he disappointed a lot. A lot of people used him as a single in that race and ended up being beaten by the other Baffert, which how many times do we see that? Is where the other Baffert beats, the favorite Baffert. But, Maximum Security, maybe is topping out. I mean, he's just, maybe he's just reached his level. He's not a spring chicken anymore, and he's had a lot of great races in him, and maybe he's just kind of leveling out. And if that's the case, then that makes him vulnerable moving forward at a short price. So, we'll see what happens if one of these other handicap horses around the country can how that field shapes up.
And to me, Baffert was, I thought, unperturbed by it when we talked on Monday. If anybody missed it, catch the archive. And he acknowledged two factors. Number one, how heavy the heavy going at Santa Anita, and the pace. I mean, the mile and eighth pace, and having essentially, he had the horses blanketed either side of him, and he didn't look particularly comfortable. The reality too is, from a figure standpoint, he ran a 101 buyer, and it's kind of a, it's a B minus race from him, from a figure standpoint. But again, I asked Baffert point blank, do you think, as you get to know him better, is he a horse that kind of needs things his own way? And by that, I mean, more comfortable fractions going the longer distance. And I people are going to potentially be dismissive of him going to Keeneland. And you're going to have a very different scenario from a pace standpoint going 10 furlongs versus 9. And I would not just write him off. I think in some degree he was a little bit of a victim of circumstances Saturday.
Well, you know, just a couple observations off your observations. One was the way the Awesome Again was run. There was a group of horses just all clustered together. They weren't ordinarily going super fast, but they were all clustered amongst one another. And then Improbable was quite a few lengths, you know, back running, quite frankly,
dream
relaxed.
Track. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, by himself in the back, and it didn't even matter if he was, you know, 8 or 10 or 12 lengths behind. Just the fact that Drayden Van Dyke was able to just comfortably gallop along. He just eyeballed the others who were, you know, clustered together like they were strap hangers on the New York subway system. And when he asked the Improbable to run, he certainly had a major kick and just ran by the others like they were tied to a post. So, you know, I think your thought process of the comfort level, you know, the fact that all those horses were clustered together, they were putting pressure on one another. And then when they were asked to try to find another gear, it just wasn't there for any of those horses because they all ended up, you know, getting beaten badly by Improbable. So, you know, that certainly makes sense. And it probably makes sense in any case with a horse who likes to run on the lead. I mean, if you can run comfortably on the lead, that's a beautiful scenario. Unchallenged speed on the front end, that's one of the, you know, best bets in horse racing. But if somebody just kind of leans on you, it just changes the things a little bit.
Well, and, you know, to some degree, that's going to be the, you know, that's going to be the situation Saturday in Baltimore, is to see how, you know, how easily Authentic makes a lead. And that, you know, that was the whole storyline, you know, in the Derby, is you know, just getting settled and being able to click along. And he, you know, he ran them off their feet. And even Tis the Law hadn't, you know, been confronted by that kind of a pace. And that's how, you know, that's how pace dynamics, race dynamics, affect. I mean, and that yeah, that's the exercise invariably when we, you know, when we're handicapping, and then you overlay, you know, the prices, and you know, you spin the wheel, as it were. Speaking of which, Rich, you know, a couple of other performers that are going to be, you know, major players, Breeders' Cup, CZ Rocket coming out of that sprint championship, and there's a bit of a vacancy now with Volatile gone. Peter Miller gunning for another Breeders' Cup sprint opportunity. How about United, who's going to be the North American, you would think, going to be the, you know, the North American favorite. We'll see what Europeans end up showing up. There'll be any number of these from Saturday and Sunday and Friday at Santa Anita that are going to, you know, be prominent at Keeneland.
Well, CZ Rocket is an interesting story because Peter Miller, you know, claimed that animal, and ever since he got a hold of the training and took over, this horse has found basically a fountain of youth. I mean, he is running at a level that is just absurd to this point to make himself one of the favorites in the sprint. I guess a question I have, and I'm literally asking you for help, is Vekoma pointed for the sprint or the mile? Because,
well,
I am so impressed by him.
This is a question that seemingly is a bit of a mystery, and I actually reached out, I guess it was last week, to Randy Hill, and we'll check with George Weaver. I don't like the fact that we really haven't, you know, we haven't heard much, and he is working. It's not like disappeared from the work tab. However, the work tab is very light. He has spent September. You know, he's up here at Saratoga, and he just has got, you know, some half miles, very easy half miles. So I don't know. I think we need to hear what Vekoma's status is, and if there's uncertainty about whether we're even going to see him a month from now.
Well, you know, I certainly hope we do. I know when we watched the Vosburgh last week, I was thinking if Vekoma had been able to make that race, he would have. He would have been able to probably be the most likely winner in that race, especially when Volatil dropped out. But since timing-wise and training-wise, he couldn't make the race. It sure looks like he's going to train up to the Breeders' Cup. But if George Weaver can get him right off of Works, he obviously is an extremely talented individual. He's had a great season so far. But I know he got set back by the foot bruise, and it's been a long time to try to get him back to the races. But, you know, he's got his eye on the prize. And the prize is either going to be the Breeders' Cup Mile or the Breeders' Cup Sprint. And the reason I just brought his name up, because if he runs in the Breeders' Cup Sprint, you know, horses like CZ Rocket and others are going to take a serious amount of betting. And I would like Vekoma's chances to win a race like that. Switching over to United, you had mentioned United. And there was an example of a talented horse who was able to get a lead at his own leisure, at his own pace. And when they tried to get him in the stretch, there was absolutely no way they were going to catch him, whether they got an Uber or a Lyft. He was gone. And it'll be interesting to see what kind of tactics, you know, the turf. I'm real interested to see who comes over from Europe for sure for a race like that, because in past years, the grass races and the Breeders' Cup, the foreign contingent usually is pretty strong. But United certainly is one of the better ones here in the United States, and he doesn't need the lead to win, and he's had some excruciating defeats where he's lost by noses and heads, but certainly a very, very talented individual for Richard Mandela.
Well, last year, of course, just nailed by Bricks and Mortar. Rich, a couple of minutes to fill out, and did you look at Belmont today at all?
You know what? I have been so busy. For people who are interested in my work, I did the Friday card at Pimlico. That's ready up on BrisNet.com. I did the Saturday card, Preakness Day. That's up at BrisNet.com. And I'm actually doing both a Keeneland sheet and a Santa Anita sheet every day in October. So I was not able to produce a Belmont sheet for today, but I've got two sheets coming out every day in October that those two tracks are running. So I'm going to beg off on a pick this week.
Okay, that's all right. I'm not a problem. We invite everybody for Rich's analysis, and nice that you're also doing Keeneland. And I will tell you, I mean, tomorrow, for those that we'll probably talk to Marcus Hirsch tomorrow, and of course James Scully too, but you know, tomorrow they jump in right away with the Alcibiades, the Grade One, and the Phoenix on the sprint side. That was the race that, you know, I mentioned. Mo Don't Know. That's the race that that he was cross entered in. He's a big price tomorrow if he were to run in the Phoenix. But Phoenix is terrific. Can I squeeze you a little bit what you did in the Phoenix?
Well, actually, I haven't gotten to the Phoenix, but
okay.
The horse that I do want to talk about is Thoughtfully, because, you know, off the Princess Noor victory last weekend, a lot of people have already anointed her as the favorite for the juvenile fillies and the, you know, potentially an Eclipse Award champion in the division. But I tell you what, Steve Asmussen has two fillies that I am waiting to run. You know, one of them is Thoughtful. He's going to be running in Alcibiades, and the other one is Cantata, who I guess is going to show at Belmont Park when they have their two-year-old filly stakes. But those two fillies, in my mind, have showed an extraordinary talent. And if Steve Asmussen, who is one of the best trainers in the world, you know, gets these horses to keep improving, I'm not about to give Princess Noor a silver platter, a free run. I think those fillies are capable of being just as good.
It's funny. She's going to end up being a really divisive horse when we lead in to Breeders' Cup, Rich, because, you know, there is the school of thought, you know, that figs don't lie, and that, you know, she's going to have to get faster for Breeders' Cup juvenile filly success. And, you know, then there's the element of, you know, just, you know, how easily she's done it. You know, yesterday, in fact, you bring this up, and I saw, I'm trying to remember who it is. Somebody whose opinion I respect referenced. Oh, I know it was on. Actually, it was on my board. It was on. It was a Derby Trail, and we've got a West Coast participant who's got a very good historic appreciation, and he made a comparison to Nyquist, and he said that if you go back and you look at Nyquist's 2-year-old form and you know the level that he was performing at from a fig standpoint anyway, that was a good potential, you know, if she's able to elevate and meet whatever level of competition she faces at Keeneland, that might be a horse that you could make a parallel to, because Nyquist didn't look fast either early on when he was building the resume at 2.
Yeah, there's no question, Steve, that sometimes some of these horses may not run the fastest speed figures, but all they do is win.
Yeah.
There's a lot to be said for that, because you know, there's sometimes animals have a herd mentality when they're running in these races, and they refuse to pass other horses, and you know, the horse that is willing to separate himself from the others, well, those are the horses that are a little bit special. But you know, again, I'm waiting for Steve Asmussen's 2 fillies to run, see what kind of performances they turn in, and see if they're going to be legitimate contenders in that Breeders' Cup juvenile fillies.
Well, his 2-year-old program has been, whereby quite a few outfits have, you know, made the point that they've been delayed, and you know, pandemic really hit at a bad juncture in terms of interrupting the 2-year-old in training sales season, and so, you know, a lot of horses arrived late into their prospective and respective barns. So in the meantime, it didn't seem like the Asmussen camp was perturbed by that as much, and the 2-year-old program, it's been a parade of really top performances, whether it was at Saratoga and Ellis, and you know, then there's the hinterlands, you know, the outlying provinces of the Asmussen camp. I mean, wasn't there the Texas bred that showed up, or the horse that had won at Lone Star that showed up at Churchill, and you know, there's his program seemingly clicked right along, and it feels like he'll have a loaded wagon when we get to Keeneland with the 2-year-olds.
And certainly one of the benefits of the Asmussens is Steve has the tremendous work and support of his, I guess, his mom and dad, who developed the horses on the farm. And so a lot of times when those 2-year-olds show up in the Steve Asmussen barn, whether it's in New York and or Kentucky or wherever, they are well-schooled, they are well-educated, they're well-trained, and he just needs to polish the apple in a lot of cases there, because his family, his mom and dad, do such a great job in preparing these young babies.
Rich, I appreciate it. Best of luck with the plays Friday, Saturday, the Pimlico, and all season long at Keeneland. We'll do some recapping on next week when we talk.
That sounds good. And if anyone has any questions about my material, they can always email me. They can use my rich_ng@hotmail.com, and I'd be able to help them if they're interested in any of the products or any questions at all. Just fire me off an email.
Rich Eng, everybody. Rich Eng for Pro Pick on Twitter, of course, and the author of Betting on Horse Racing for Dummies. If you don't have it in your library, or if you're fairly new and building a handicapping library, you need Rich's book on the shelf. We'll catch up with Rich next week as we send you out into a nice race day. We've got Belmont picking back up, so you got TV today, America's Day at the Races, to look forward to. Indiana, I told you, another terrific sequence in the Big Five. Today at Belmont, I should mention, the Joseph Gimma and the New York bred 2-year-old fillies and the return of stimulus check for the Matisses. The big win at Saratoga, but there's some good ones. No Mo Spending in here. It's just a six-pack, but it's okay. No Mo Spending for Ian Wilkes. Irish Constitution for Ray Handel, and your 8-5 favorite. So, good luck if you're playing today. I think I'm actually going to concentrate on capping the rest of this, including Keeneland tomorrow, and then of course weekend preview. We got all the stuff to look forward to tomorrow. Marcus Hirsch and James Scully and Dave Brenning, Nick Tamaro, Hammer, and much, much more. All right, everybody. Good luck. Talk to you in the morning.
It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Our Pennsylvania breeding program was, of course, impacted by the pandemic. Now, with our country getting back to work, we'd like to again talk about our program, the best in North America. Our breeder awards will remain up to 50% for PA-sired PA breds. Owner bonuses will also stay at up to 40%. Restricted races will again be run at all three PA tracks, and PA Day at the Races will return. I'm Brian Sanfratello. For more, please visit PABred.com.